is the commemoration of the disappearance day, or days, of two great personalities, Gadadhar Pandit Goswami and Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. So we're going to speak first about Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. So Om Magana Timidandasya Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Unmeditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, first of all, let's talk about Gadadhar Pandit Goswami's what we call ontological position. That means basically who he is. I mean, that's like I'll give you an example of what I mean about ontological position. If I ask you what your ontological position is, and you say, my ontological position is that I am American, or I am white or black, or I am Jewish or Christian, that's not an ontological position. Ontological is something like the Dharma, you know, who you are in essence, you know, eternally, and who you don't cease to be, you know, what are you? And that means your spirit, soul, part and parcel of Krishna. That's your ontological position, servant of Krishna. These are all parts of your ontological identity. Okay. So as far as Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, his position is that he is considered to be the appearance of Srimati Radharani in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Of course, he's a member of the Panchatattva, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Actually, there's two Gadadhars in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. One is Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, the other one is Gadadhar Das. Gadadhar Das is considered to be the effulgence of Srimati Radharani. That's pretty interesting. So even the effulgence of Srimati Radharani is personal. Everything in the spiritual world is personal. Everything in this world is dull, dead matter. And we're attached to dull, dead matter. And you love dull, dead matter. Especially this dull, dead matter that you're carrying around. You love. Okay. So everything in the spiritual world is personal. But Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, he is actually Srimati Radharani, but there is a little, let us say, variation on the theme. Because he's Srimati Radharani, but with her man taken away. That means her anger taken away. Because Srimati Radharani is a left-handed gopi. She's the head of all the gopis, and particularly left-handed gopi, which means she gets angry and unsubmissive with Krishna to please Krishna. Of course, in this world, people are angry and unsubmissive to displease the other person, but Srimati Radharani gets angry with Krishna to please him. And there's even this place called the Manasarovara in Braj. Sarovara means like a lake, small lake, Kund. And it's the place where Radharani gets angry. She goes there when she gets angry with Krishna. And she just sulks. You understand the word sulk? No, you don't know the word. Moody. Sulking means moody. Like that. And it sulks. And then Krishna comes. And Krishna comes down and he begs for forgiveness. He just like pays his humble obeisances at her lotus feet, just like the devotees say, please accept my humble obeisances. So Krishna offers his dandavats to Srimati Radharani, touches her feet, and there's a whole forest there where that happened, right next to this Manasarovara. It's a very beautiful place. Anyway, it's a part of the Braj Mandal Parikrama. So anyway, so Gadadhar Pandit Goswami did not have that particular aspect of the mood of Srimati Radharani. Some of the acharyas describe that particular bhav, that emotion, mood, was stolen by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna. He's also in the mood of Srimati Radharani. So you have Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani, and Srimati Radharani, who's given up her anger like that, as Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. So Lord Chaitanya in his pastimes with Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, would try to make Gadadhar Pandit Goswami angry. He would neglect him sometimes, but Gadadhar Pandit Goswami would never reproach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He would never reproach Lord Chaitanya. So he more or less had the mood of Rukmini, even though he's Radharani. You understand? Rukmini's mood was very submissive, just like when Krishna in Dwarka tried to get her angry by telling her that even though she was a grandmother, it's time for you to look for someone who's actually qualified to be married to. Nobody knows what caste or background I'm from. You should have married that Shishupal. You're such a nice, handsome young man. You gave him up for me and was kidnapped by me. And instead of arguing with Krishna, she just fainted. And Krishna had to manifest two extra arms to catch her. So that's the mood of Rukmini. Whereas Satyabhama was exactly the opposite. Satyabhama really, you know, nagged a lot and talked back to Krishna and to please Krishna. So Satyabhama in Dwarka Leela is generally considered to be Radharani's expansion, whereas Rukmini is generally considered to be Chandravali's expansion. Of course, Chandravali is an expansion of Radharani, so things equal the same thing or equal to each other. So that's another point. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, Satyabhama was manifest as Jagadananda Pandit. And Jagadananda Pandit, he definitely argued with the Lord. He went one time to Bengal and he collected a lot of sandalwood oil so that the Lord Chaitanya would be able to rub the sandalwood oil on his head. It has a cooling effect. There's different types of oil. Mustard oil has a very heating effect, and sandalwood oil is cooling. Of course, it's very expensive. Please don't rub it on your head, because better you offer it to the deities. Anyway, so he collected a whole bunch of sandalwood oil, and Lord Chaitanya basically told Govinda, that his servant, he told Govinda, you know, how can I accept this sandalwood oil? People smell it on me. They'll think I'm a Dari sannyasi. That means a sannyasi who keeps ladies. You know, some fop. Yeah, that's an old English word. Anyway, just like a so-called gentleman. And so Lord Chaitanya told Jagannanda Pandit that, you know, you should take this oil and use it for Lord Jagannath instead of for me, because I can't accept it. And Jagannanda Pandit got so angry that he took the oil and said, who has told you that I brought this oil? And he smashed the oil on the ground. You know, literally, there was probably thousands of dollars worth of oil destroyed. I have one disciple in Fiji who produces sandalwood oil, and just like one bottle, he gave me one bottle, several bottles I have for my deities, but one bottle this big, it's worth $1,000. What you buy in India is not, I guarantee you, it is not very much sandalwood oil. It is, they give it the smell. I mean, expert scientists can determine how to give something a particular smell or a taste. That's food. Food nowadays, you know, is like that too. They put in chemicals. So, but real sandalwood oil is about $1,000 for a bottle. So he gives it to me. I don't sell it. I use it for my deities. Anyway, so getting back to Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. So Lord Chaitanya could never really get him angry. And he was a constant companion of Lord Chaitanya from Lord Chaitanya's childhood. They actually grew up together. But he was of a different nature than Lord Chaitanya. He was very serene, he was patient, he was calm, he was fond of solitude and very renounced. And Gadadhar Pandit didn't like very much Lord Chaitanya's pastime as a scholar, because Lord Chaitanya would ask his fellow students like meaningless questions just to engage in what we call sophistry. Sophistry means basically you just argue for the sake of argument. You know, you know different techniques. They do this in the university sometimes, and they have debate tournaments and things like that. We had one devotee here who had a medal, a whole statue for winning a debate in the university. So Lord Chaitanya was very much engaged in this sophistry, and Gadadhar Pandit, or Gadadhar at that time, remained a little separate from him because he didn't want to engage in this. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Gadadhar, he said, this is an interesting quote, he would say, Gadadhar, in a very short time, I'll become such a Vaishnava that Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva themselves will come to my door. So that, even that statement, Gadadhar didn't like. You know, he liked the statement that Lord Chaitanya was going to become a Vaishnava, but he thought, this Nimai, he's so proud that he thinks Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are going to come and offer him obeisances. You know, this he's a little bit too much. You know, he's puffed up with learning. So Gadadhar Pandit was very affectionate towards another devotee, Mukunda Dutt, and the two would talk about Krishna Katha all the time. And one time Mukunda Dutt told Gadadhar Pandit, he said, there's this great devotee, Pundarik Vijayanidhi, who has come to Navadvip. I want you to meet him. So they both went together to meet him. And the famous story, of course, is that Pundarik Vijayanidhi was dressed like a dapper gentleman. And he was seated on an opulent bedstead, chewing pan. And Gadadhar thought, you know, wow, this guy's not a Vaishnava. He's just immersed in the ditch of material enjoyment. And Mukunda understood, and he began to recite a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Pundarik Vijayanidhi went into ecstatic trance, exhibiting the symptoms of Vyabhachari Bhava. And then Gadadhar Pandit understood what was happening. And when Pundarik Vijayanidhi came back to consciousness, Gadadhar Pandit asked to become his disciple. And Pundarik Vijayanidhi at that time said, only after many, many births does one attain a disciple like this. Hmm. So he took initiation from Pundarik Vijayanidhi. So one time, another story about Gadadhar Pandit and Lord Chaitanya. Gadadhar Pandit went to Lord Chaitanya's home one day, and Lord Chaitanya asked him, where is Krishna? Where's that blackish boy who plays a flute? And Gadadhar replied, he's in your heart, which is true. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to tear apart his flesh, his transcendental flesh, of course, and with his nails. And Gadadhar grabbed his hands and stopped him. And Lord Chaitanya said, Gadadhar, let go of my hands. I cannot remain without Krishna even for a moment. Hmm. And Lord Gadadhar said, just try to be patient and calm yourself. Krishna will come any minute now. And when Satchimata heard how Gadadhar Pandit had saved Lord Chaitanya, Satchimata said, this Gadadhar is very intelligent. He should always remain with my son. Hmm. He said, remain with him always, and if you stay with him, then I won't have to worry. Later on, when Lord Chaitanya exhibited his symptoms of Krishna Prema, Lord Chaitanya said, Gadadhar, you are so pious and virtuous. Since your very childhood, you were devoted to Krishna. My life has been wasted. Due to my previous evil activities, I cannot get the association of the Lord of my life, Sri Krishna. Hmm. So Gadadhar was Lord Chaitanya's chief companion during the pastimes in Navadvip. And when Lord Chaitanya went to Jagannath Puri, Gadadhar Pandit, he went to Jagannath Puri too, and he took the vow of Kshetra Sannyas. That means remaining in one place, serving the deities, and actually it's a type of renunciation. One can actually be married too, or have a wife at that particular time. It's a type of anaprastha life. Although Gadadhar was never married, still Kshetra Sannyas is generally considered vanaprastha ashram. So he took the vow of Kshetra Sannyas, and he would regularly recite the Srimad Bhagavatam to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And his business, or his duty being a Kshetra Sannyasi, was to worship the deity known as Tota Gopinath. Tota Gopinath deity right now is a sitting deity. It's one of the few deities of Krishna that is sitting down. Very big deity. And the reason he's sitting down is that Gadadhar Pandit Goswami was worshipping him, and he was getting older and becoming incapable of standing up to dress him. And so the deity actually sat down to allow Gadadhar Pandit to dress him. It's a very beautiful deity in the middle of Jagannath Puri. Mm. And there's also Let's see, another story. Oh, was that when Lord Chaitanya went to Vrindavan, Yadadhara Pandit Goswami wanted to follow him to Vrindavan, but Lord Chaitanya said, you have taken this vow of Kshetra Sannyas, so you should stay. You don't want to break your vow. And just by trying to leave me, you've broken your vow already. But Lord Chaitanya protected the vow, and Lord Chaitanya ordered Gadadhara Pandit to go back, and Gadadhara Pandit fainted in ecstasy, feeling the separation of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so he was worshipping Lord Chaitanya in that mood. So, and that Lord, and Gadadhara Pandit would regularly, as we mentioned before, regularly read the Srimad Bhagavatam to Lord Chaitanya, and that Srimad Bhagavatam that they were using became smeared with the tears, by the tears, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So later on, when Srinivas Acharya wanted to get that Bhagavatam and learn from Swarup Damodar Goswami and some of the remaining devotees study Bhagavatam, then that Bhagavatam was illegible because it had been smeared. All the letters had been smeared by the tears of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that's Gadadhara Pandit Goswami. And now we'll speak about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a Nityasiddha devotee, although we hear in his early pastimes there were activities that were apparently non-devotional. Mm. But this is, basically it's a pastime. It's a pastime where Krishna puts his devotee in a place or in a situation that may be apparently non-devotional, but it shows by example how a devotee can advance in devotional service. In other words, Krishna is showing by the example of his devotee how one who takes up devotional service can transform his life. Even Krishna, in his pastimes, took shelter of the spiritual master, got trained up, not in Krishna consciousness, but got trained up in Vedic arts, 64 Vedic arts. And so he showed us the necessity of accepting a spiritual master, going to school. So in the same way his devotees do that. Mm. So he was first brought up in a very rich family, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Excuse me. But when his father passed away, everything that had been left to the family was taken away by some legal intrigue. And his family fell into a condition of poverty. And this was an interesting thing, too, because when you have something, a lot of wealth or something like that, and all of a sudden you're put in a condition of poverty, you learn the lesson that this wealth is illusory. When you keep having the wealth, when you don't lose it, then you think, oh, it belongs to me. But when something is taken away, this is very interesting. So that's why Krishna does this to his devotees. Yashaham anagrinami hurisheta dadamshanai. For those who he especially favors, he takes away things that they're very attached to. So, you know, think of the thing you're most attached to. And that's what Krishna's going to work on. Your thing you're most attached to other than Krishna. I mean, you could say, I'm most attached to Mangalarti. Oh, Krishna's going to take it away. No, he's not going to take that away. But think of the, you know, all of you should just meditate right now on the thing that you have the most attachment to. I mean, not for Krishna. I mean, of course, I'm attached to the temple and everything like that. But you know, I may be attached to having people appreciate me and say, Jai, Jai, Maharaj, or touch my feet. You know, to my position, it may be like that. Or whatever, you know, think of the thing you're most attached to, and that's separating you from Krishna. It's interesting. The things you're attached to are separating you from Krishna. Not spiritual things, of course, but the things you're attached to that don't have connection with Krishna are separating you from Krishna. Okay, not to scare you all. So, because that is pretty scary. If I think of the thing I'm most attached to and think Krishna's going to take it away, you know. I'm just going to go and pray to Giriraj right now. You know. So, but Krishna did that with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He took away all the wealth. He was living in a mansion when he was young. Mm. And so when he was 12 years old, of course this is the tradition, when he was 12 years old, the marriage was arranged. And it's not that he lived with his wife, and his wife was only 5 at that particular point. And so they waited until later on, like 18 or something like that. And then there's the whole history here of how he had so many illnesses and from drinking water. At 18, he went to the university, and he was so intelligent, like a really super intelligent person. He began to write extensively both English and Bengali. That's in 1856. In 1857, he composed, remember, he's only 19 years old, an English epic named The Poriad, which he planned to complete in 12 books. This is about the life, excuse me, about the life of Alexander the Great. And he was very attracted to Christianity at this time because the Hinduism that was being presented was more or less impersonalism. And so basically he liked the Western writers like Thoreau and who were the other ones? Oh, Parker, Channing, Emerson, and Newman, much more than the Vedic writers because he didn't really connect the Vedic teachings with personalism at that time because basically there was these impersonalist yogis who were very famous in Bengal. And very little personalism being taught. And in 1858, he went to visit his paternal grandfather, who was getting ready to pass away, and he actually predicted that Bhaktivinoda Thakur would be a great preacher of Krishna consciousness. Let's see. I'm going to go very quickly. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's first wife died in 1861, and he married his second wife, Bhagavati Dei. He became deputy magistrate in the government of Bengal, wrote English books called Our Wants on People's Needs. In 1866, he took the position of deputy register, and he became very quickly fluent in Persian and Urdu. And he kept looking for a copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita because he heard about this book. This is the book that actually convinced him to fully take up Lord Chaitanya's mission, Krishna consciousness. Finally, he found the copy, and he read this book incessantly. That means he kept reading it over and over and over again. And his faith developed more and more by the association of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and became, at this point, he manifested his position as a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And finally, he delivered a speech on the Srimad Bhagavatam to a congregation of many prominent men. There's another famous story in this place called Champarana. There was a ghost that people were worshiping, and the ghost was in a tree. You find this in India, man. People worship, in many cases, any damn thing. You know, female deities, they have rat temples. You know, rats. And we're not talking about just the carrier of Ganesh. The carrier of Ganesh is a rat. But they had temples where the rats literally covered the altar so much you can't even see the altar. Go on to YouTube if you want to see this. Just type in rat temple. And you'll see the rats just like... I mean, these are poisonous rats, too. So these people were worshiping the tree. There was a ghost in the tree. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur employed the father of a girl scholar to recite the Srimad Bhagavatam. And when the father finished the Srimad Bhagavatam, the tree went crashing to the ground, and many people had faith in Krishna consciousness. Another famous story is when he was posted as the magistrate, and everyone knows this story. There was a yogi named Vishakshena, who had some mystic powers. He kept the mystic powers in his hair. The yogis sometimes keep the mystic powers in the hair. And the kings of Orissa were swayed by him. And they used to send all these ladies for his enjoyment. He had his Rasa Leela dance. Probably wasn't a good dancer either. He actually called himself Mahavishnu. And he had two associates. One was Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. And they sort of helped him in his illicit activities. Of course, he didn't understand that Mahavishnu is not supposed to dance with gopis. he should have called himself Gopal. You know, Krishna in Vrindavan is supposed to dance with gopis, but Mahavishnu doesn't even mess with that stuff. So the British wanted to arrest him, but nobody would dare arrest this guy because he has some mystic powers. Finally, Bhaktivinoda Thakur went, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, you should come to Jagannath Puri to have darshan of Jagannath. But this Bishak Kishena said, why should I come to see Jagannath? He's only a hunk of wood. I am the supreme in person. And that was fighting words, as they say. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur became so angry, he arrested the rogue, brought him to Puri, threw him in jail, and he was guarded. It took so many people to guard him, and they actually had to bring people from outside to guard him. 36, that's 36, Muslims, and 72 policemen from another city called Cuttack, day and night. And Brahma and Shiva were also arrested, but they said, we're innocent. We were forced to act by this guy. So they let them off. They say they turned state's evidence. In other words, they were witnesses for the state against this rascal. So the trial lasted for 18 days. On the sixth day, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's daughter became very sick. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's wife said, you know, stop this. You can't do this. We're all going to die. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, yes, let us all die. This rascal must be punished. You can imagine? That's great determination of a Vaishnava. It's like Lord Nrsingadev. And the last day, Bhaktivinoda Thakur became very sick, and he actually had to drag his body to the prison, to the courthouse, and he pronounced sentence over the guy, and then what happened is that they cut this guy's hair off, and he became very weak because he became fasting and had all his mystic powers in his hair. And 3 months later, he took poison and died. And so that's a famous story. Between 1874 and 1893, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was more or less in seclusion, and he wrote several books in Sanskrit along with their commentaries, known as the Sri Krishna Samhita, Tattva Sutra, and Tattva Viveka, and many books in Bengal or Bengali, such as the Kalyana Kalpataru, and other books in Sanskrit. Even in Jagannath Puri, they began to criticize Bhaktivinoda Thakur because he wasn't initiated at that time. And the standard was, before your initiation, you wouldn't use panti mala, that means neck beads, or japa mala. So they said he has no signs of the Vaishnava, and tilak also. So this person known Raghunath Das Babaji criticized him, and he contracted a deadly disease. And in that disease, Lord Jagannath appeared to this Babaji and told him to beg for forgiveness. He did so, and he was forgiven by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and cured. Another person that was a rascal was Charanadas Babaji, who was preaching this mantra, Nitai Gaur, Radhisham, Hare Krishna, Hare Ram, which was very famous in Orissa. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur preached to him long and hard. And this guy admitted his fault in spreading this mantra all over Bengal and Orissa. And six months later, he went mad and died in great distress. So you have to be careful when you confront a pure devotee of the Lord like Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he spent a lot of time in Jagannath Puri, in the Samadhi of Haridas Thakur, the Siddhapukula where Haridas Thakur chanted his japa, and the Gambira where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lived. And he wrote many books there. In 1874, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur took birth. His name was Bimal Prasad. In 1874, Bhaktivinoda Thakur discovered that the king of Puri had stolen 80,000 rupees for his sense gratification. Of course, that's not so much nowadays. That's really not that much at all. It would be about $1,200 in today's rupees. But in those days, it meant probably about $1 million. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, being the magistrate, forced the king to offer bhoga to Lord Jagannath 52 times a day. And so all the money was running out. The king was thinking, I have to offer all my money to Lord Jagannath. We got to kill Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he employed all these brahmanas to perform a sacrifice, yajna. And they performed it for a whole month. And at the end of the month, it was 50 Brahmins. At the end of the month, instead of Akhivinoda Thakur dying, the king's son died. So many other books he composed, such as Krishna Samhita, Kalyana Kalpataru, and he was able to represent Krishna's character and worship in a way that was respectable, whereas previously Vaishnavism had fallen into ill repute. In other words, people thought it was just like a sex religion. So he was able to present it in a way that people would respect Krishna consciousness. In fact, even one of the Western scholars said, "You have presented Krishna in a more sublime and transcendental light than hitherto has been the custom. You have rendered an essential service to your co-religionists, and no one would have taken more delight in your work than my departed friend, Goldstucker," probably Jewish, "the most sincerest and most zealous advocate the Hindus ever had in Europe." See? So, anyway, that's my heritage. So, he took Pancharatrika initiation from Bipini Vihari Goswami. Of course, he was more so closely associated with Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, who he met during one of his many trips to Vrindavan. Bhaktivinoda Thakur went 3 or 4 times to Vrindavan and not only met his guru and saw the holy places, but he actually helped clean up Vrindavan because there was a gang of dacoits there known as the Kunjharas, who robbed and killed pilgrims, and he got evidence and gave it to the government, and these dacoits were dismissed or gotten rid of, put in jail. Another thing is, another book is the Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, which I've written a course on, Vaishnava Siddhanta Mala, Prema Padipa, and Manak Shiksha. I guess that's a commentary on Raghunath Das Goswami's Manak Shiksha. And finally, he found this Upanishad called the Chaitanya Upanishad, which talks about Lord Chaitanya's, a prediction of Lord Chaitanya's appearance and verifies that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was wanting to go to Vrindavan again, but then Lord Chaitanya gave him service. In a dream, he had a dream. Lord Chaitanya said, "You want to go to Vrindavan, but there's some service you must perform in Navadvip." So then he was transferred by Lord Chaitanya's mercy to Navadvip. And during that stay in Navadvip, he was staying in the Navadvip town in the roof of what's called the Rani Damshala. And he looked over present-day Mayapur, and he saw a light, a tall tree, with a light coming from it, an effulgence coming from it, and a small building. So he went there, and there he discovered a mound of tulsi trees, and he discovered that that was the appearance place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This was confirmed by Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, who was 125 years at that time. And Jagannath Das Babaji could hardly walk. He was carried in a basket by his servant Bipini, or something like that. Bihari. And Jagannath Das Babaji jumped out of the basket, began dancing in ecstasy, and confirmed that that was the actual place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So let's see. In 1894, at the age of 56, that's a very young age. But in India, the life expectancy was a little less than it is here. He retired, and even though his family opposed his retirement, he stayed at Surabhi Kunj and preached and sometimes went to Calcutta. Surabhi Kunj, of course, is across the Jalangi River from our temple in Mayapur. And he preached Krishna consciousness. Then he also wrote another book called Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Life and Precepts in English, and that book was sent to many Western institutions such as the Royal Asiatic Society in London and the Library of McGill University in Canada, which devotees found that book, and I think they actually stole it from the library. So anyway, so in 1908, he took sannyas, Paramahansa sannyas, and in 19, and he remained just closed up, basically in Godram Dweep, he used to tell people he was sick so that he could just remain absorbed in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. So on June 23rd, 1914, just before noon, Bhaktivinoda Thakur left his body, and it's also the disappearance of Gadadhar Panda Goswami, which we said before. And his remains were interred in Godram. Godram, that's across the river from Mayapur. And let's see, just a little bit about his character and his schedule. The Calcutta High Court judge said, "I knew Bhaktivinoda Thakur intimately as a friend and a relation. Even under the pressure of official work as a magistrate in charge of a heavy subdivision, he would always find time for devotional contemplation and work. And whenever I met him, our talk would turn in a few moments to the subject of bhakti and dvaita, and the saintly work that lay before him. Service of God is the only thing he longed for, and service under the government, however honorable, was to him a clog." In other words, just an impediment. So here's the schedule, just to get give you an idea of his great enthusiasm to serve Lord Chaitanya. At 7:30 to 8 o'clock at night, he would take rest. So in other words, he would take rest early. Early to bed, early to rise, makes a person healthy, wealthy, and Krishna conscious wise. So this is a good example for us. At 10 o'clock, when the rest of you are getting ready to go to bed, he would rise. And he would write until 4 a.m. And then at 4 a.m. he would take rest till 4:30. He would rise, wash his hands and face, and chant japa until 7. Then he would write letters. 7:30 he would read. 8:30, he was very punctual. He kept this pocket watch with him all the time, and he would be always consulting, very, very, extremely punctual. He actually regulated the worship in Jagannath Puri to extreme punctuality, which wasn't going on before. I mean, I think he was the first acharya to ever use a watch. So, 7:30 he would read, 9:30 to 9:45 in the morning, he would take rest, another 15 minutes. So he's into these very short rests, which is actually mentioned nowadays in the business field. You're supposed to take like a power nap, it's called. Like not more than 10, 15 minutes. So he was into power naps, and he knew about power naps before anyone in the material world knew about power naps. So at 9:45, he took his another bath, breakfast of half quart of milk, a couple of chapatis. 9:55, went to court. He wore coat and pants to court. He didn't wear a dhoti, but he wore neck beads and tilak. He was strong in his decisions. He would shave his head monthly, and at 10 o'clock, the court began. And he went to court till 1 o'clock. The court was finished. He'd come home and bathe and refresh. At 2 o'clock, he'd return to the office and stay there till 5. At 5, he would translate works from Sanskrit into Bengali and other things like that. And then after that, he would take evening bath and meal of rice, a couple of chapatis, and a half quart of milk. It says he always consulted a pocket watch. He was very punctual, which I mentioned before. He was charitable to brahmanas, equally befriended the other castes. He never showed any pride. He never accepted gifts from anybody. He even declined all honors and titles offered by the government to him on the grounds they might stand against his holy mission in life. He was very strict in moral principles and avoided luxurious life. He would not even chew betel. I mean, everybody in Bengal chews betel. You know, all your taxi drivers, they're driving you, and they're always chewing this betel. These little packages, foil packages they get, and they stick them in their mouths, and they chew the betel. He didn't go to theaters because they were frequented by public women. And as far as his language skills, he spoke Bengali, Sanskrit, English, Latin, Urdu, Persian, and Oriya. He started writing books at the age of 12, and I don't have the exact number of his books, but it's at least 30 to 50 books, you know, large books that he wrote, and continued turning out a profuse number of volumes up to the time of his departure. In addition to books, he wrote so many Vaishnava songs, and many of his songs we sing here, but there are actually several song books, which we don't have in our song book here. These are just a few of his songs and other Vaishnava songs. Many song books are just full of his realizations. And anyway, so his life is very inspiring. It shows also how one can be in the grahastha order of life and be a great acharya in Krishna consciousness, so there's no detriment. As Lord Chaitanya said, kiva vipra kiva nyasi shudra keta noi ye Krishna tatva veta se guru hoi. One may be a learned Brahmin or shudra, whatever, but if one knows the science of Krishna, then that person can be accepted as acharya or guru. So we shouldn't consider someone's background or social status when hearing from them. Okay.